Good evening, folks. I want to call the meeting to order, the City Council of Ferndale, for September 6th, year 2016. Let's stand together with the salute of our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. You may be seated. Our city clerk will now do the roll call.
Councilmember Zarr, here. Councilmember Hansen,
here.
Councilmember Olson,
here.
Councilmember Taylor,
here.
Councilmember Bursch,
here.
Councilmember Goodrich,
here.
And Councilmember Watson via Skype.
Very good. Very good. Let's see here. What we got next year? We have public comment. This is the time the public can come up and speak up to 3 minutes on anything that's on your mind. And introduce yourself, tell us where you're from, and you have our attention.
Hi, I'm Yvonne Goldsmith. I live at 5840 Church Road here in Ferndale. And I just want to tell, I've already told Greg this, but I want you all to hear it. I thought he did a fabulous job tonight doing orientation on the budget. And I'm just totally impressed. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mrs. Colson. Anyone else wish to speak this evening? Seeing none, we will close. Excuse me, Councilmember Goodrich.
Papa John asked me, thought he was going to be here tonight, and I guess he's not. He had a concern about the traffic during
street
festival, and the fact that he rides the bus, and that there was an issue with the bus, and the bus driver is about ready just to pull the bus off to the side of the road and walk because it would have been faster. Do we want to address that now under public comment, or would you like to talk a little bit more about that later?
I would suggest we send that directly to the Public Works Committee, if we can put it on the agenda for the next time. Would that be okay with the...
I just wanted, because I got stuck in it, too, yeah. And I talked to some of the chamber folks, and there was some finger-pointing between the chamber and the city and who was supposed to do what thing, so...
Yeah, let's put it on the agenda next Public Works Committee.
We're going to be closing the streets down here again here in another month, so for the Halloween thing.
Thank you very much. Is that okay, Council? Okay, we'll do that. I think that is it for public comment then. We now go on to the consent agenda. We've been requested 3 items to poll, so I'm looking for a motion to adopt the consent polling bill, these 3 items. I'll place them in a moment. The encroachment item ordinance and then the 2 staff contracts. You don't need that? Okay. We need a motion to adopt the rest of it. Okay, sure.
I'll make a motion to adopt the consent agenda minus those 3 items.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to adopt the consent agenda minus those 3 items. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The consent agenda has been adopted minus those 3 items. So let's do this. Let's go right to the 2 contracts. And Councilmember Bursch, hold those. You have the floor there.
Well, my concern is we are accepting a salary for 2018 on these employees, and we as a council have not discussed salary increases for the non-representative employees for the next 3 years. So that just tells me that when we do discuss them in a month or two, that that's going to be across the board for all non-rep employees.
The consent agenda is just for the 2 staff members listed there. I don't think there's an implied statement about anyone else. Maybe I'll let the city administrator, who's been our finance director for a few months.
These contracts are for, as you know, for the remainder of this year, and then 17 and 18. And yes, in 2018, then we're proposing that it be instead of a fixed dollar amount for the 2 employees, it would be inflation plus a 0.5% with a cap of 3%. The concept is the idea of multi-year salaries just brings a little more stability to the organization. This also will get us Right now, all of our union contracts, as well as the non-represented contracts, roll off at the same time. And I'm not really sure if we want to do that. It makes it easier because we're talking about wages for everybody all at once, but it also makes it more difficult because you're talking about the wages for everyone all at once. So it's completely up to the council. We have made, administration has made commitments to these two employees for 16 and 17, and the dollar amounts are in here. And I understand the desire would be to have a contract through 2018.
And whether it's represented employees or non-reps, we typically do 2 and 3 years. It'd be odd for us to do 1 year contract.
I understand that. We're fixing the salary. That's what we're going to give everybody that's non-rep in 2017.
That's not the motion today. It's just for these two people. Councilmember Olson.
I think I see where you're saying it's setting a precedent for
right.
the others.
For the rest of the non-reps coming up.
That haven't been determined yet.
All the other non-reps at least, roll off at the end of this year. So we'll need to talk about 17 as well as potentially 18 in the future, in the near future probably. But the other groups, at least our machinists, are scheduled. Their contracts also expire at the end of this year. And we're talking about, again, multi-year contracts, probably in line with these numbers, since these numbers, at least the 3% number, is pretty indicative of what a lot of our, not most of our other union contracts already have.
So you're going to put forward the CPI of whatever that is, plus the 0.5%?
Right now it's unknown, obviously, because we're talking 2018. Yeah, so it would be whatever the CPI.
And that's what's going to be presented to all of us to accept that for all the upcoming contracts.
It'd be something for us, for you to discuss, certainly, and then to decide what's most appropriate.
So this is not going to force us to accept those.
You can do what you want with the next one. This is a unique group because of Clerk Duncan's accreditation and a new staff member.
I just don't want to be tied into this for everybody else. That's my concern.
Any other questions from council on the two contracts?
Yeah.
Waiting for council direction on those two contracts?
I'll move that we accept the two contracts, the clerk's contract and the finance director's contract as presented.
Second. It's been moved and seconded to adopt the contracts related to our city clerk and the hiring of a finance director. Is there any more discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Aye. Thank you. Opposed, say no. I believe it's passed 7-0 to approve the two contracts. Having said that, I would like to invite kind of officially now the new finance director, Circa. Last name, help me out.
Salmanen.
There you go. Salmanen. I'll get it. To go ahead and join us at the big table. And we want to welcome you. And would you like to say a couple things? What do you do, right? Say hello and we hear what you sound like.
Sure. Hello. It's nice to meet all of you. And I'm honored to be a part of City of Ferndale.
Well, we're glad you came. You don't actually technically start working until, the
2016?
The 19th.
There you go. Yeah. So you're on your own time tonight, but we're glad you're here. Very good. And congratulations once again, Susan, on your accomplishment and your accreditation. The other item, Paul, we'll go right to it. Encroachment permits, and I believe that was Councilmember Taylor.
When we received the document, it was a little bit late. It was on Monday rather than Friday, and, you know, I didn't really have a lot of time to review it. But the amendment seems unnecessary and likely to impede future economic development, and I feel like it's a big deal when our existing process is already in place and it seems to be working, and I'm not sure why we would adopt this without it going to public hearing. And so I feel like...
Would staff like to address that?
Yori Burnett, Community Development Director. I guess I'll start with the procedural part of it. In the Ferndale Municipal Code, there are certain chapters or modifications that do, by code, require a public hearing. Those are generally zoning text amendments, comprehensive plans, and a few others that are specifically listed. Changes to Chapter 12 are not something that requires a formal public hearing. Certainly, the council has historically enabled public comment, you know, at various times for different modifications. As far as the need or the perceived need, and I don't think that IS staff will address, you know, possible impacts to economic development, because I think that that would be the council's right to determine whether or not it would. What we felt with our encroachment permit process at this point was, while we believe that the city does have the ability to identify possible impacts to our infrastructure resulting from both the physical encroachment as well as the adjacent land use, we recognize that while there may be the implied ability that clarifying it so that potential applicants know of our expectations is appropriate. There are very few times in the city where we don't have both the opportunity to look at, to review the land use and identify mitigation measures through SEPA and our existing processes, where usually the encroachment permit kind of follows on the back end of it where the land use has already been reviewed. But we have had a couple of instances along Molloy is an example, when the county borders it, and then certainly the Border Patrol itself when it came in, where we didn't have the ability to review those developments, and as a result, I think we've typically been able to reach some sort of compromise. But knowing that we have more roads like Molloy, and knowing also that we do have the Lummi Nation properties as well, and that there are pending developments, we thought it was appropriate to move forward at this point so that there was no confusion, I guess, when an application came in.
It adds another layer of bureaucracy when there's already it's already outlined in the existing ordinance how these processes should take place.
Yeah, most of this was done under the direction, and actually in some cases the encouragement of our city attorney, because a good example was the Border Patrol, where because it was an arm of the federal government, they didn't go through the normal SEPA process that we would normally follow here. And the whole idea here is that if there is any ambiguity to what can be required or what should be required, it's better to explicitly state what the intention of it. These are revocable encroachment permits, which make it hard, because the worst thing to do is to allow an encroachment upon the right-of-way, figure out later that the impacts are rather severe, and then attempt to revoke it, because you enter into a lot of issues with people already having, you know, planned their developments or created their driveways, when indeed, if we had the ability up front to look at the impact, as we should, but at least in code, have the ability to say, you need to tell us what the impact is. It will help us not only determine the appropriateness of encroachments as to how big, how wide, where, but it'll help us later or perhaps prevent us going in and attempting to revoke an encroachment permit after the fact. So we just, it's really something that we feel is just going to bring a lot of bring clarity and be put the city in a better position to be able to appropriately mitigate for the impacts. Because unless you know exactly what the impacts are, it's hard to say what the mitigation should be.
Any other council members? Councilmember Taylor.
But it's already laid out in 1222.080 denial. Why do we need to add this extra layer of bureaucracy?
I think just to protect the city.
I would like to see it go to a public hearing and open to the public.
Yeah, staff, is there any sense of urgency to this? Could this withstand a couple weeks of enjoying the sunshine and maybe go through committee and come back again?
Well, encroachment permits, unlike building permits, say, aren't vested to any particular set of rules. And so should the city get encroachment application between now and next time we meet, and if council does choose to change it, the rules in place at the time that we're reviewing it would be in effect, not in the time of application. So bottom line, no, there's no urgency. We have the opportunity to.
I guess on the other side of the coin, I would hate to just delay for delay's purpose. I mean, I feel like this is needed. We've worked pretty closely with our city attorney trying to come up with what might be acceptable. As you can see, we're not really changing much in here because it was fairly well written, except for our experiences with the Border Patrol and trying to come at them either during the process or after the fact. It made it hard where we couldn't point to a section of our code and said, we need to know your impact because you're just not immune to everything.
Councilmember Olson.
Those guys just do whatever
they want. That's right.
I think if we're going to do this, the proper procedure would be to, she can make a motion to table it, mm-hmm. send it to the committee, and see if that passes. We had it for 2 days, and nothing became of it. I mean, things like that happen. No big mm-hmm. deal, but I don't think we should just channel it there without having a vote to see if there's enough.
Councilmember Goodrich.
Well, first off, the Border Patrol built their thing several years ago. So why is there an urgency now, or what sparked this change now when the example you're using is something that was built several years ago?
Mm-hmm. Just trying to anticipate the future and having us be in a better position in the future than we were in the past.
You mentioned Malloy, though. There's Ethne speaking about the one around the 6,000 block there. Or?
I'm not sure. What were you referring to at Malloy?
There have been a couple on the west side of Malloy in particular, which are in the county where, yeah, I think it is
the 6,000. Oh, the end of Brown Road there.
Just south of the Brown Road, yeah. It's been on our list of things to do, you know, for a while, and we were able to get to it. We had a couple weeks since we had the early August and then mid-August, and we had 3 weeks to get to it.
Council, what is your pleasure?
I'd like to make a motion to table it.
To refer back to committee and bring it back.
Refer back to committee.
Table. Right, I mean, that's what we're going to do. Is there a second?
I'll second.
So it's been moved and seconded to send this to committee, which would be land use, I believe.
Public work
or
planning.
Either. It was in PLU.
It was.
Okay, PLU committee to look at it the next find the land use committee, and then we'll bring back to council.
Did this go through the committee once already?
Yes.
Yeah. It's stand a little more sunshine for a couple weeks. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
Okay, council, what is your pleasure?
I'll move that we pass the encroachment permit amendment as written.
We'll second. Second. It's been moved and seconded to pass the encroachment permit amendment, which is an ordinance. Is there further discussion? There's a discussion from the audience. We generally let the audience speak on these things. Are you ready for the question? All in favor of passing the encroachment amendment ordinance, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The encroachment ordinance has passed 6-1 with Councilmember Taylor voting no. Thank you very much. Going on to our regular agenda now, item C, stormwater control revisions. This is an ordinance, and I believe we have two of our experts with us today, at least one will be speaking. Welcome.
Good evening, Council. Excuse me, Wendy LaRock, stormwater manager. Before I speak on this, I just wanted to mention that bringing the flyers for the workshop for homeowners and property owners who have stormwater facilities on their property. So that's going to be September 13th, next Tuesday, at City Hall.
Thank you.
Okay, so I've brought this ordinance to council many times, but the main reason I'm bringing it tonight is because with this next year, we're required by the Department of Ecology through our stormwater permit to adopt the new stormwater management manual, which is the 2014 manual. And so this ordinance does that. It has us following the most current manual, which would be that manual starting on January 1st, 2017. So the main difference between this manual and the 2005, which we're currently following, is that low-impact development is the primary method of mitigating for stormwater that's required for development. So I've been here talking about LID before, low-impact development, but the basic principle of that is to maintain native site conditions and to have the rainwater that falls soak into the ground where it falls instead of shunting it into pipes and ponds, which is kind of the more traditional way of mitigating for stormwater. So ecology in the new manual has lists of what they deem the most efficient or effective stormwater BMPs. So it starts with just complete infiltration, and then it goes through bioretention, rain gardens, just kind of in order of what they deem the best of those, least effective. And so each development will have to go through and prove that they cannot do those items on the list before they're allowed to do the traditional stormwater facilities. So that's the main change. The other couple changes were just kind of falling in line different maintenance provisions for the LID. And then also we just added in a section for the preliminary stormwater report, which was pulled from the development standards, which is something we've been working on throughout the summer, too. And then I think the only other section is just kind of bringing to light that each project does need to do minimum requirement number two, which is the construction stormwater report, which basically outlines how they're going to keep dirty water from going all over the place.
Questions? From council? Council, what is your wish tonight?
I'll move for approval of AB 1609002.
Second.
It's been moved in the second to adopt the ordinance related to stormwater. And that's Agenda Bill 1609002. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of adopting the ordinance, say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. It's passed 7-0. And thank you very much. I think you have the next one, too, don't you? Okay, good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Council. Paul Knipple, stormwater technician. As Wendy mentioned, the preferred approach for on-site stormwater management moving forward, the 2014 Stormwater Management Manual, is low-impact development. And so as projects approach the stormwater manual, they are required to move through a list of preferred approaches in order to deal with the stormwater on-site. And they are required to do on-site analysis to determine which approaches are feasible, and as they're ruled infeasible, they move down that list. And so some municipalities have taken the approach, and it's outlined in the Stormwater Management Manual, that municipalities can create geographic boundaries where, due to reasons such as infiltration rates or depth to groundwater, that they can label those areas as infeasible. What that means is for small projects, you've got some direction and clarity that when you move, if you're doing a project in that area, you know that you can move down that list and you know which approach is most appropriate for your project. So we recommend entering into a contract with Associated Earth Sciences, Inc. to provide a technical report and a map detailing areas of the city where the approaches are infeasible, as well as providing direction for areas where there is feasibility. And the total cost for that, $49,337, would come from the professional services budget. And here tonight is Jay Chenault from Associated Earth Sciences, Inc. And if anybody has any questions, he was going to provide some technical information as well as answer any questions about the report.
Councilmember Goodrich.
I buy a lot. I want to build a home on it. With this map, then I can come to the city, see if this, my property falls under the guidelines. if we didn't have this in the city, what would I have to do as the owner of this lot if I want to build on it?
Yeah, so the benefit is that for especially the smaller projects, the single-family residents, everybody is required under the manual to prove that those approaches are infeasible via an on-site analysis by a licensed professional. So if you came into the city, this will be a GIS layer. You come into the city, you can then determine that area of the city is infeasible for infiltration based on the criteria, and that would provide you with the direction that the approach is prescriptive to the manual, that you can move down that list, take that approach, and you don't have to pay the cost to have that assessment done on your site.
Okay. That gets into my thing, and I know there's a person in the audience that doesn't like this either. Fees. But if we're providing this service to somebody, and let's just gonna pull numbers out of the air. Let's say if I were to do this on my own, it was going to cost me $100. But I can go to the city, and I'm saving $100, but I can get it free from the city. Can the city charge a fee to recoup some of this $49,000 that we're I don't like fees and things, but we're basically giving the builder something for free that's costing the city.
Sure, and
$49,000. So could a fee be set up? I'm not saying that we have to try to recoup the full $49,000, but, you know, something that, yeah, it's not equivalent to them going out and doing it themselves. In other words, if it costs $100, we're not going to charge $100 for it, but we may charge $50, you know, or something. I don't know the numbers and things, but, you know, some way to recoup this thing so we're not giving it away free.
Yeah, well, maybe Kevin talk. That's a hard one because I guess to, and I'm trying to figure out who took over Brent's mind here.
Me.
we have our water lines mapped and our sewer lines mapped, and so someone wants to come in and says, I want to build a house, I want to build a business. We'll say, oh, here's the sewer line. Here's the water line. Here's a wetlands overview. Oh, boy, you've got wetlands potentially or you don't. So it's a little hard to do that because I see your point that it is the person would not have to go out and prove a negative. They wouldn't have to go out and hire someone to dig some holes and determine whether it was feasible or not. So there's no doubt that it would save them some money. But I think, as strange as this may sound, I think it's almost a service we want to provide because we don't want to make it harder for folks to develop their land. And it sounds like DOE is comfortable by us going, pulling up the map going, oh, no, you don't have to worry about it. Move on with something else. Or, hey, it might be feasible. Then we would require the additional on-site work. So,
that was one of the issues that came up in committee. Right. You know, what are we really getting out of this for this?
There is an advantage. I'm sure he can talk that when it comes
Let's
to our water.
From Jay, and then Councilmember Olson.
Okay, so I'm Jay Chenault with Associate Earth Sciences. I'm an associate hydrogeologist and engineer, and we've been working with the city, particularly on the water supply side, for a number of years now. And so Paul and Wendy asked us to provide the scope of work to do a similar studies to what we've done for other jurisdictions that kind of answer some of these questions. And I think to wrap it up in a big picture, in addition to this, you can envision a map that will have, you know, citywide map that will have these black or gray shaded areas that were based on all these criteria that Ecology outlines in their new manual. These fail for various reasons, and they're deemed infeasible. So that's step one, and I think it provides clarity to the developer and the city staff so everybody knows in those areas what the, you know, you skip these steps, you go straight to here, and it's not a lot of back and forth and wondering what applies where. The second part of our study is kind of a more detailed understanding of the feasible areas. So, you know, the white area of the map that's not infeasible is where stormwater infiltration may be feasible. And so part of our work would be to map those areas as an infiltration feasibility with kind of low potential, moderate potential, high potential for infiltration projects in those areas. And so that way, both city staff and the city or the developers would know, well, this looks like a really good spot to develop using these LID techniques, or, you know, it might be more problematic in these areas. And so it provides a little more clarity and some information up front to developers in the city in that regard. And then the last piece, and so in addition to that piece, we'd also develop a deep infiltration feasibility map. And so what Ecology is talking about in their manual is LID to infiltrate into the shallow subsurface. And what we've started to understand and implement in other areas is the idea of deep infiltration, where you may have a low permeability cap that makes shallow infiltration infeasible, but if you drill wells through that low permeability cap, there's good unsaturated sands and gravels below that that can infiltrate a lot of water. And so that enhances groundwater recharge to aquifers and all of that. So that would be a piece of the study as well. And then the final piece would be kind of a checklist or a guidance document. So if you are in a feasible area, you know, what do I do? And so the city would have this document, developers could have this document and say, these are the steps I need to take. This is the type of infiltration tests I need. This is the information I need to provide the city. And so there's consistency with the applications that are coming in, since this is pretty new. It's the new manual. Consistency with applications coming in and consistency with how city staff is reviewing those applications. And they've got a guidance document to say, you know, right here, you didn't provide X, Y, and Z. Please provide that, and then you can evaluate. And so it just adds clarity on both sides, I think, to the situation. So those are the pieces that are in the proposal.
Councilmember Olson.
I didn't really hear any benefit to the city myself from what you were saying. What I heard was more benefit to the developer. I believe in the committee meeting, I came in kind of at the end, so correct me if I'm wrong, there won't be any visits to any of these places and actually digging holes and checking it. This is by checking some other charts or graphs or something?
That's right. So it's existing data that we'd be using to develop all of the maps.
I'm not an engineer, but with the problems we had at our Thornton soil testing down there, it can vary just within a few hundred feet or a couple 20 feet. I don't know how accurate that would be based on what we saw at Thornton Road. Really surprised Brent brought it up. But I was going to bring it up. To me, this is another unfunded benefit for developers, and we're not 50,000. We could do a lot of stuff in 50,000. And I don't see any benefit to the city to do something for the developers. Again, and that's nothing against you. Sorry, I know you're just trying to sell us a service.
And so I guess to clarify a little bit, what deems areas infeasible is not directly related to infiltration rate alone. And so Ecology doesn't want infiltration to occur on steep slopes or in landslide hazard areas or in areas of known shallow groundwater areas. And so those areas are pretty well defined within certain setback buffers of water supply wells, septic drain fields, mm-hmm. And so those types of things that are well mapped and well defined, you know, LIDAR data is great, and so determining, you know, slope classifications of various areas in the city is easy to do using LIDAR and precise, and so that would be one of the areas that would be a blanket not feasible on areas mm-hmm. above a certain slope. And so the infiltration rate and not, you know, going out and digging test pits is not really a pathway in this blanket infeasibility study identified by Ecology anyway. There's provisions in there that you could use existing, like this, as the city has data from existing infiltration tests that have gone on, you can use that data to delineate further areas. but it's not really looking at map soil types or geology and saying this is till, it's infeasible. That's not the approach, nor the allowed approach.
And I kind of disagree with what Greg said about we're not costing this extra thing to the developers. Ecology is. We had nothing to do with this. So I don't really see why we have to pay. If ecology wants to lay down more rakes, we all know we got to eat it. Doesn't mean we have to pay for it, though.
So I think the biggest impact will be for the small developments, the single-family type projects, the developments that are under 5,000 square feet of impervious. Those are going to see the biggest impact from going out and spending that kind of money proportionally. It'll also provide a resource for planning and permit review for city staff so that they can move through that data in the wellhead protection area, anywhere where there might be MACA, closed landfills. All that data is provided in one place, and that makes that review function much easier for city staff as well.
And how many of those do we have that he just described, Yori?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question? We had a minor Skype issue. Councilmember Watson has a question, too, after that.
Sure. I believe you quoted small things under 5,000 feet developments.
How many lots less than 5,000 square feet?
Well 5,000 square feet is impervious.
Most of our developments are quite bigger than that.
Most of them are, but there are a surprising number that are on the razor's edge, where we've actually had a development that has occupied a fair amount of staff time where, you know, in all honesty, if we had information like this in a different area, we probably could have pushed that applicant in one direction or another rather than flipping a coin over the last 4 or 5 days.
So your surprising amount, you just described one. Is that fair?
I did just describe one. You are absolutely correct.
I'm kind of sharp on that.
Yes. I'm not a stormwater expert, and we did talk
about... No, I know that. I'm talking about developments in 5,000 feet is what he just described. I was curious how many of those we have. I don't mean to put you on the spot. I just don't think there are that many.
I don't know if I could give you a number, but as the person who reviews for the stormwater component, those single-family residence applications, you know, so if we're talking about impervious surface, once you reach over 2,000 square feet of impervious on a single-family residence for these applications that we're seeing, and that includes everything, that includes the roof area, that includes the driveway, it's pretty easy to go over that threshold of 2,000 square feet, then you are required to take this approach. Just off the top of my head, you know, a couple dozen this year of houses that would be required as of the first of the year to move through those criteria.
And these were all built, the ones you used, a couple dozen. Each sole person owned them. They weren't combined for a development. Is that correct?
Each single-family residence application is required to move through this. So it may be in a greater development, the direction.
That's what I'm getting at. I'm not talking about one particular council member Taylor buying a lot. It could be a developer that had two dozen lots combined. So that's what I was trying to get an answer for. How many single people are being bitten by this as opposed to developments of 24 that's he's going to have to spread his costs among those 24, not just one person?
And that would require a greater investigation for those larger developments.
That's fine.
Once you reach over, so a common plan over 5,000 square feet, you know, those are considered all together, then you would be required to do a more in-depth investigation and site plan around that moving forward. So the applicability is more geared towards those smaller projects.
Thank you.
Councilmember Watson, your turn.
Just a quick question. I was wondering, the county does soils maps. Are we going to be able to use those soils maps in any way? I'm still struggling to figure out how, if we can't get it to parcel level, how this is
going to
help an individual or a developer.
Right. So the existing county soils maps would be the data source for the soils component. And so, and as you recognize, these are, you know, regional kind of mapping projects. And so down to the individual parcel level, the soils, for instance, may not be perfectly accurate to the parcel level. But when we're mapping infeasibility, we're using soils along with geology and wetlands, and where those polygons interact or overlap would be indicative of shallow groundwater. So that's what we're looking for, is not a particular soil type. It's where the soil type is mapped as saturated soils. It's also mapped in the NWI database as a wetland, and the geology is low permeability materials too. Where those pieces interact and overlap, we figure, okay, it's more likely than not that there's shallow groundwater in that area, and so it becomes infeasible in that category based on that way. So you start to get more precise by using multiple data sets that may be of regional scale. So that's the approach using the soils. And then the soils would be used in that second phase as general criteria in the feasible areas of low, moderate, or high potential for infiltration. And I think the other thing I would just bring up is I think a further benefit of this study is it starts to, in the big picture, link up kind of the stormwater management, infiltration, groundwater recharge, aquifer management, like the whole hydrologic cycle. Instead of being separate, the city is starting to build all these data sets together, and so we can manage it in a more conscientious way for all of those factors.
I think our stormwater specialist, Lenny Rowe,
can tell me. I guess my understanding of this map and kind of how it would benefit the city is that, so for all these small projects, if we can knock out areas that don't even have to do any testing, that's testing the homeowner or the developer doesn't have to do, and testing the city doesn't have to then facilitate that, the review of. It's just like check a box. So even if, I mean, so the developer pays for the city to have our consultant review their product. So if we don't have to review their product that was unnecessary in the beginning because it could be knocked out with a map, that's one less step. City has to facilitate, there we go, and just, you know, one less step in the process. It's going to make everything move a lot faster. So I guess we're kind of looking out for just the smaller projects that are in areas that nothing needs to be done. They don't need to do a bunch of research on their own. We have a map. We just tell them, check this box, we're done, they're done, move on to the next step.
So, I mean, if I understand you, and I'm learning this too, if we don't adopt something like this, certain developers would have to pay for the study to be done, and then the city would have to take city time to review that study.
Right, so we're finding these layers for them. Maybe they find them, maybe they don't. Maybe they do the pit test or the infiltration test and find out that they, just to find out that, hey, most of the city of Ferndale is actually clay, so you can't do anything anyway. So I guess that's what we're trying to avoid with this, and hoping we would help out with these new regulations, trying to get the small property owners kind of through that step that could be pretty unnecessary.
Thank you. Councilmember Hansen.
So did I hear you correctly when you said that this mapping might also identify opportunities for breaking through the shell, getting down into the deeper aquifer, and the potential to recharge aquifers? Did I hear you correctly?
That's correct. So one of the phases of the project would be to do a deep infiltration feasibility.
Right, okay. And so, you know, this then would also then identify opportunities to recharge the aquifer that we're drawing water from. Some of the, you know, residents in the outskirts of the town are drawing well water from. And, you know, we've heard over the last couple of years some complaints from people living in the outskirts of the city about the draining of the aquifer that we're all drawing water from. So this actually would identify some opportunities for us to actually kind of recycle our own water in a sense. Yes?
That's it.
I was going to say, have you seen any municipalities that charge a $20 or some sort of a storm infiltration review fee? To kind of go back to, I think it was Brent that mentioned the idea of maybe assessing a small administrative fee that over time could claw back some of these costs. Have you aware of it?
I have not, but I haven't.
Yeah, it's not something.
I don't know how much one test would, I mean, my understanding is these, the infiltration tests are
filtration tests are pretty pricey, so I think you'd hit the 50K pretty fast. And it's in our CIP, but not like we're pulling money out.
Council, any more questions?
Yes.
Council, what is your pleasure?
Do you have an audience?
Oh, I didn't hear it.
Yolanda, do you have something?
I want to know what alien invaded you.
Council. Council Member Goodrich, thank you.
I can see some of the benefit of this and things. I'm just tired of these things that keep coming to us that we do, and then there's no funding for it. I mean, yes, there's money in the budget, but could we better be using this $50,000 for something else versus this, and without getting any way to recoup some of this stuff? So I'm kind of torn whether or not to vote for it or to vote against it or send it back to committee. They'll review... possibility of a fee structure to the finance committee. I'm not sure where to go with it, to be honest.
Well, there's currently nothing to vote on, so, Council?
Yeah. I don't know. To me, it seems like for just under $50,000, it seems like we're getting a mountain of data to help us make decisions in the best interest of the citizens of the city of Ferndale. So I move that we... accept the contract with Associated Earth Sciences for this mapping work.
It's been moved by Councilmember Hanson, seconded by Councilmember Taylor, to approve the expenditure of some $50,000 on the contract for the infiltration. Is there more discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of adopting the contract, say aye. Well,
I was going to say if we could explore the option of possibly... looking into administrative fees, if we can maybe charge. I don't know if that should be part of this motion or something.
You can certainly do that here. They could be done later, I imagine.
Yeah, we could ask later.
Maybe investigate it legally, okay. For one thing. Can we go ahead and...
we could certainly do it later. I think the issue is going to be just... excuse me. I think we can do it because it would be applied probably to all development projects in the city. It's basically a small charge to... pull it up, look at it, talk it over with the homeowner, and say, okay, yeah, here you go, here you don't go. Whether we would want to do that, I guess, would really be more your decision to make.
It kind of sounds like a separate issue, but we could bring that back.
Sure.
Check into it and bring that back.
Absolutely.
What different amounts might look like. Is that okay? Yeah. Any other questions on the motion? Again, the motion before you is to spend some $50,000 on this infiltration contract. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Who's listening for Kathy? All opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Okay, there. Thank you. It has passed. The motion has passed. The ordinance has passed. It's an ordinance, but to spend $50,000, 5-2 with Councilmember Olson and Councilmember Watson voting no. Thank you, Council. Thank you, guys, for coming.
Thank you for coordinating outfits.
Okay. Mr. Burnett, I think you're on deck. Traffic impact fees. Might I say the main event is perhaps for some.
Good evening, Council. Yori Burnett, Community Development Director. Council Member Watson is still with us. We are just sharing our screen with her. I'm not sure if she can see what we're seeing. We're seeing a map.
I can see it,
Murray. Okay. We are before you tonight to consider updates to our traffic impact fees, which is Chapter 15.44 of the Ferndale Municipal Code. We are updating this chapter because we have just recently adopted the 2016 updates of the comprehensive plan. Of course, that is the information is contained primarily in the transportation element, which was recommended by the Planning Commission and approved by Council in late June of this year. As the Council is well aware, that plan shows a very significant amount of money that the city is going to need to spend over the next 20 years in order to maintain its adopted levels of service. What we have done is worked with our transportation consultants, the Transpo Group, to determine what the best method would be as far as traffic impact fees. Those, again, are an optional mechanism that cities can use, and this city has used historically, to require that development pay its proportionate share of growth-related expenses. I'm not going to go into a whole bunch of detail at this point, except for to tell the council that we have come to the conclusion that you can operate within brackets of between $3,000 citywide for traffic impact fee per trip. That's the yellow that's shown on your map. And that is not subject to, it is subject to discussion, but it seems like we've landed on that cost for the majority of the city. And then you have either alternative A or alternative B within the planned action area, which is shown in pink in your map. That's the area where we expect really traffic-intensive uses to go in. And we already have an increased fee compared to the rest of the city in that area. We are recommending that that be either $3,500 in that area under alternative B or under alternative A, $4,000. You can operate within those brackets. So the high and the low within that we can get to and we can justify. In the green is a downtown area, which you may include as either alternative A and B, which is $3,000, or alternative C, which is somewhat less. The takeaway for that, why should downtown be less? It's not only to possibly incentivize development, but because the Transpo group has calculated that actually statistically land uses downtown generate less traffic. It's a more pedestrian environment, and it will continue to be so. So don't necessarily think of a lower fee downtown as being a meetup incentive. It actually does have numbers to support that reduction. The other change, and then I'm going to turn it over to you because we will have provided the technical analysis and it will be the policy, is on the fee sheets that show all the different land uses up and down. We're proposing to simplify it a little bit for residential, where the difference in residential types, there's a whole bunch of different residential types, duplex, single-family attached, townhouses. Really, they're all within the noise of one another, where the biggest demarcation is a single-family detached versus attached unit. So we're wanting to shrink that down, makes it more simple, save staff time in debating with applicants. Generally, what we see is it tends to round up. So by doing this, the city will tend to collect slightly more money, but we're talking really pennies on the dollar. So with that, happy to answer any questions you may have.
Yeah, before I take council questions, I have two questions. One, we would be among the maybe the highest impact fees in the county, perhaps.
Within the county, yes.
And could I assume this would then pay for all of our projects? This covers the entire bill of all the projects, right? That's why we're going to do this.
That would be incorrect, and you should do your homework.
I think you should explain this doesn't cover the cost.
Absolutely. That's an excellent point, Mr. Mayor. As I said, we have to look at the proportionate share that growth would be responsible for. Not all of our projects are as a result of growth. Some of them are a result of changing regulations where, oh, we now need to add a bike lane or something like that. Some of them are a result of deferred maintenance where all of a sudden, rather than just doing some chip sealing or something like that, we actually have to redo a road. That's not growth's responsibility. That is, in part, our responsibility as existing citizens to pay for because we're the ones that ultimately broke it. And then there are other projects for which the city is not 100% responsible. And some of them are included in the alternative A, which is the higher alternative, where under alternative A, we would be paying for a portion of the cost of what will ultimately be a WashDOT project. That's over at the overpass. So we end up, through traffic impact fees, it'll be difficult to determine precisely how much we get, right around the high 20s to the low 40% of overall costs.
And then my last question, it's kind of a process question so council can move forward, is we currently have fees, whatever they are, $2,500, $2,700, whatever they are right now. So if we don't pass something tonight, we still have fees cooking here. My question is, can they tackle parts of this thing, like the plan action core, then the residential? It might be difficult to formulate one united sort of motion here. Can you give us some guidance on how to move forward to a decision?
I would recommend that the council try to do it all at once, okay. Rather than building the roof first. We have fees, as you said, right now, and we can delay this for a period of time until such time as we can come with a whole city ordinance.
Fair enough. Council. Councilmember Goodrich.
I wasn't in favor when we raised the fees to what they currently are today, and I'm going back to my old roots here, and I'm not in favor of raising the fees again. I am very concerned about the economic future of brick and mortar. I just heard a report here last week where mall owners are getting to be very concerned because they're losing tenants, and new tenants aren't coming into malls, and they're wondering what's going to happen to these things. I don't see Walmart or some big store like that really coming to Ferndale right now, just because of the economic. Amazon is killing a lot of the brick-and-mortar stores. Where I see this hurting, though, is small retailers wanting to come in by raising these fees. I see some of those mom-and-pop type things or whatever, those coming into town, and raising the fees on those may keep them from coming. Walmart or whoever, Target, whoever, they have the money. They're going to pay the fees. If it's economically beneficial for them to plan the store in Ferndale, our fees aren't going to really stop them, because they're going to make it up in a month or whatever. Where it's going to hurt is the small guys. And so, therefore, I personally can't support this, and because I think we're going to really be killing off more of the small growth that I see coming. I just don't see the big growth. And as far as the homeowner, homes things, they're just going to put that onto the sale, the cost of the sale of the house. It's just going to pass through there. And then it comes down to, can you sell a house for $315,000 or can you sell it for $318,000 here in Ferndale? Let's just say, it's a $3,000 deal on a house. Can Ferndale support that additional cost? And that's where the builders are going to have to decide in the real estate market. I mean, it's good right now, but what's the future going to be? So, with these variables that are out there and following the economy, which isn't all that great right now either, I can't see justifying raising the fees.
Thank you, Councilmember. Councilmember Olson.
We have all these projects that somebody's going to have to pay for. Obviously, we don't have the money to pay for them. So I don't think we can stick our head in the sand any longer. As it is, what did you say we're paying between 60 and 80% of the projects?
What would it be? It would be the high 70s to the low, to the high 50s, I believe. You're making me reverse my head, Matt.
You said 20
he got it.
40,
he got it.
So I just reversed it to 80.
No, he got it. Sorry.
So again, somebody's going to have to pay for this stuff. I don't know where we're going to get the money. So with that, I'll propose we approval of AB 1609-004, alternative A and alternative C.
I'll second the motion.
It's been moved by Councilmember Olson and seconded by Councilmember Watson to adopt the fee ordinance with alternative A and C. Is that what you have? A and C?
Is that correct? Correct.
Okay.
So that's 4,000 in the pink?
In the plan action area.
And then
the
area where we're going to have all these projects.
50 in the downtown core.
Downtown
and
core.
3,000 in the rest of the city.
And 3,000 in everything else.
Which is the same on both alternatives.
Which the increase on a homeowner is about $300 on the homes. That's not a big jump for the homes.
Correct.
Okay. Councilmember Hansen, then Councilmember Goodrich.
No.
I'm sorry. Anyone before Councilmember Goodrich? Councilmember Goodrich.
I see what Council Member Olson's saying about, you know, we have these projects down the thing, somebody's got to pay for them. The question is, yeah, you can set these fees, but if nobody comes, then what? How are you going to pay for these projects?
We won't need them.
You don't have impacts.
Yeah, so I think, like I said, I don't see the big projects coming, like the Walmarts and stuff, that warrant the larger fees. And the roundabouts and all this mega stuff that was proposed anywhere in the near future. So, like I said, I just can't support it.
Councilmember Olson.
We do have one. We don't. We have. What do we have that's in the neighborhood of the 120,000 foot?
Square feet?
Yes.
Samuels is the largest single.
No, I'm talking about projects in the hopper that have filed something.
Right. We have one that was filed for Nordic Way Center about this time last year. Mm-hmm. They have placed it on hold, but that is the one that we have right now.
That's the binding site?
Yes.
But have they written a check or anything?
Not to us.
Questions, comments, Councilmember Czar and Councilmember Hansen.
Well, I agree that there is more likely going to be smaller businesses coming in, especially in, well, hopefully, in that particular area. I do agree we need to raise the fees a little bit, but I think the $4,000 is too much in that zone. So I think alternative B is the better plan.
My question was, currently the fee is $3,000 in the planned action area?
Within the planned action area, it's almost $3,300.
Okay, so we're talking about?
$200 versus $700.
Right.
I believe it's $3,257.
Okay.
Oh, now you've got the numbers up.
The numbers I create.
That was just raised. When did we raise that?
5 years ago.
Correct. The traffic impact fee that we raised more recently was bringing the single family up in line. That $3,200 fee went into place with the planned action, I believe. I don't think that we have raised it for cost of living since then.
2012, wasn't it?
It was 2012.
Councilmember Watson, we don't see anybody. Do you have any comments? I'll make sure I'm not missing anything. Go ahead.
I actually did have a comment or a question. We're talking about mom-and-pop businesses and small businesses. Yori, I mean, for those kind of businesses, it's not like they're going to have 100 trips in the peak PM times. So I'm trying to figure out why this would keep them from coming to Ferndale. I mean, a mom-and-pop business isn't going to have 300 trips.
My response would be... correct. Generally, you aren't going to see them with 300 trips, but you could have a mom and pop restaurant that might be within on a 5,000 square foot lot and have 4,000 square feet, and they might have quite a few trips. Chihuahuas might be an example of that. So, compared to their size, that they might have more trips, but they wouldn't generate the same volume as a Walmart.
Can you help me understand? Can you give me a number that say that a mom and pop kind of restaurant is going to connect in the plant action area? What would the key difference be for them for a 4,000 versus 3,500? And I know that's hard because without knowing what they are, you can't really pick a number for the cars. I'm really trying to understand what the impact would be.
Well, so let's say that we have a high turnover sit-down restaurant. So we're not talking we're talking about Chihuahuas, more or less, which is expected to generate 9.85, call it 10, PM peak hour trips per 1,000 square feet of gross floor area. Say that they have 3,000 square feet, so it's 10 times 3, so that's 30 PM peak hour trips that they would be expected to generate. 30 times
500.
30 times 3,500 equals
105,000.
105,000.
Yeah, just do the 500.
Oh, well, okay. doing math on 500 difference would be, 30 times 500 would be $15,000 difference.
One time
fee.
Councilmember Watson, anything else to add to that?
Well, it's one time increase.
Yeah.
We're talking about $100,000 if you're building a new building. So on top of land costs, construction costs, everything else, it's $100,000. Yeah.
So the discussion is on the motion, which again is to adopt A and C. Councilmember Olson.
Now, what you're talking about is a brand new startup building. If I'm wrong, if somebody buys Chihuahua and makes it, they've already paid for their TIFs. So you're not going to have to pay all that again. This would be as if a brand new restaurant came.
That's correct. If there's no trips vested with the property, then that's what we're
talking about. And if somebody's in a strip mall like the old, I don't know what they call it now, the Cost Cutter one, they've already paid their trips in a restaurant there.
Correct.
So they wouldn't have anything more that they're going to have to eat unless they expanded their size, footprint, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. It sort of reminded me, I'm not any smarter than anybody else, is that the mom and pops tend to infiltrate the downtown core when they can't afford, they can't compete with Olive Garden, they can't compete with Red Robin. So they move into our pizza annex. They move into Chihuahuas. And I just think of Bellingham when Bellis Fair went in, the high-end national chains moved around, got Marie in there, and then you end up these unique restaurants start infiltrating the downtown area where the rents are more affordable. So I don't necessarily think that the mom-and-pop places disappear. They tend to move to a different part, but it's more affordable, and they tend to bring vibrancy to those areas.
You brought up a good point about the pizza annex. That was an existing restaurant, so if somebody moves in there,
no traffic in there.
Exactly. Thank you.
And what you notice that restaurants change a lot in these types of these little nooks and crannies. They do. Council, you have a motion on floor, and any more discussion? I'll repeat the motion. Are you ready for the question? The motion made by Councilmember Olson and seconded by Councilmember Hanson.
Councilmember Watson seconded.
Yes, thank you. Councilmember Watson seconded. Was to adopt the alternative A and the alternative C. Does anyone need that explained? Councilmember Hanson.
I'm gonna propose an amendment, and we'll see where it goes. I think I'd like to look at amending alternative A from $4,000. And take a little bit of the sting out. $4,000 represents almost a 30% increase. Is that correct? I'm making you do math in your head. Sorry. Roughly. And that's when I did my little hand scratch calculation. I'm hesitant to go that far. I'd like to amend the fee to $3,750. Split the difference.
A motion to amend?
Yes, a motion to amend alternative A in the planned action area and make the fee $3,750.
Waiting a second.
I'll second it.
Been moved and seconded to amend the main motion, which simply means to lower the $4,000 alternative A fee in the plan action. This is just the plan action to $3,750. Is that correct? There's a discussion on the amendment. Seeing none. You're now voting on an amendment to basically change the main motion. Well, what we just said, $4,000 to $3,750. All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed, say nay.
Nay.
I believe it's passed 4-3 to make the change to lower the fee, and that was voted in favorably by Hanson, Olson, Watson, and one more, and Birch. You now have a new main motion.
Who opposed it?
Opposed by Czar, Taylor,
you.
And Goodrich.
Thank you.
Very good. So you now have a new modified main motion, which is to adopt $3,750 in the plan action area, and then $3,000 and the $2,550 in the downtown core. Mm-hmm. So 3,000 citywide and 2,550 in downtown core. That is the main motion. Any more discussion? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? That is the main motion. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, say no.
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 Same group. It has passed. Those voting in favor are Hansen, Councilmember Hansen, Councilmember Olson, Councilmember Watson, and Councilmember Birch. Opposed, Councilmember Lazar, Councilmember Goodrich, and Councilmember Taylor. The motion has passed. Thank you very much, Mr. Burnett.
I was going to also mention, as much enjoyment as I'm sure you've gotten out of this over the last few weeks, we can do this more often. You don't have to wait 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. I mean, if situations change, and then, or you may just want to pack this away and not pull it out for a while. But this is something that we can. You now have the brackets. We now know the underlying projects. So here in the near, short, medium-term future, we could revisit this.
Very good. Thank you, City Council. Councilmember Goodrich.
Just a question. A comment was, I think Riley and I were talking one day. We use PMP, but we're starting to notice other times of the day where Ferndale was gridlocked. Lunchtime. Is PMP the standard, or do you look at other times of the day? Because some business may not have a after five impact, but they're contributing to the 20 minutes it takes you to try to get from one end of Ferndale to the other at lunchtime.
Mr. Berman, I think people can make that case.
Yes. Statistically, the volume of traffic that we have at the PM peak is still significantly more than what we get at other times of the day. That doesn't mean that we don't get congestion at other times of day, of course. So that is the standard, and it does bear itself out here in Ferndale. One of the things that we as staff do is we seek to encourage people to load onto the streets on the non-peak periods, where typically we see the most significant peaks, obviously in the morning. We see that at lunchtime, and then we start to see the slow bleed in the afternoon as well. What we found is that there are quite a number of companies, even in Ferndale, I mean, Samson Rope is a great example, that start at East Coast time. And so them starting at East Coast time and getting done at East Coast time allows them to get out at the very beginning of that afternoon bleed and before school traffic is really going. So that way they place their traffic on other times of day, and they have a very small impact fee. So it's a way for us to try to use as much of our capacity over as long a period as possible as we can, instead of just pushing it all during that time. Not always successful. The other thing that I will add too, though, is that's one of the benefits of our CEPA process, is if we do see, and the planned action studied this, not only at PM peak, but weekend peak too, but if we did see a business coming in that had an extraordinarily large noon peak or weekend peak, we can use CEPA to say, well, all right, you're paying your traffic impact fees, but you're going to need to do this mitigation of your impacts because of you, because Western Washington University all of a sudden dumped itself here, which would be fantastic in some ways. We're going to require that you do these other things, or negative in other ways.
Yeah. But I think we would allow, say someone comes to us with their plan, their development of restaurant, and I call it the traffic bible, or as you call it, says so many trips. But they, you know, we actually do most of our business late morning or not during. If they can demonstrate that their business model falls outside what the prescription is, they can appeal that, and we'll make that adjustment.
Well, and I would not even call it appeal. I would say that they would be able to demonstrate it to us, and in fact, The ma and pa's who are just starting out have been the most receptive to that, and have actually said, well, gosh, we have the ability to change our business. If they're a restaurant, it's something different. But if they are a normal 9 to 5 or 8 to 5, them becoming a 7 to 3 often is not such a big deal for them. Chuck and at Cheesecake is one example. LaBelle is another, both down off of Hovander, where they have agreed in the conditions, and I believe they're recorded, state that their hours of operation are from here until here. So that's been successful.
Good work, Counselor. Anything else? Going on to our next agenda, I don't think,
Thank you, Counselor Young,
on city lobbyists. Something new for us.
Yeah, exactly. This is something we've talked about over the years. It's quite normal for large organizations, City of Bellingham, the Port, what have you, to have full-time lobbyists. There's also organizations that might even have lobbyists, and this is a lobbying consideration for a full-time lobbyist down in Olympia. There's others, I think the tribes being one of them, that actually have lobbyists in, as well as in D.C. as well as in Olympia. So it's really no one-size-fits-all, but it is a good way to have your interests carried down to Olympia. We were very lucky in the last couple of legislative sessions in getting transportation dollars, and I sure want to keep them. These monies are subject to appropriation each year. Our monies for Thornton came from somewhere else, and I would hate for them to go somewhere else in the future. And so this is the agreement is for $20,000 for a full 12 months of concerted lobbying efforts down in Olympia. The gentleman who we're proposing has come highly recommended by those down in Olympia who do this all the time and feel like he would be extremely good at protecting our interests. We did have him come up and speak to both the mayor and I. We were quite impressed with his abilities. He's worked for a couple of governors in the financial management office and also for the Association of Washington City. So this is something I think the time has come for us to kind of protect what we have down in Olympia, and also he would be available to find either new opportunities down there and kind of bring the Ferndale message down to our legislators down in Olympia.
And I know the word lobbyist is kind of a dirty word, but I think there's a point for cities, especially growing cities, we need to have ears and eyes down there. And there were a lot of phone calls between Greg and myself and people in Olympia at the time of this road money was being allocated. And we did have some ears and eyes sort of informally down there, and this would just strengthen what we need down there. Councilmember Bursch, then Councilmember Olson.
Besides the monthly stipend, what expenses would we expect to see on his monthly expenses?
My understanding is that is it.
Because on attachment A it says including expenses.
Right.
So, yeah. Not me. That's it.
Yeah. We've not talked with him yet about how often. I'm thinking that we will want him to come up here. We could do it on Skype, which is apparently working quite well tonight. So that's good to see that some of our IT is paying off here. But yeah, I would anticipate having probably one or more sessions with him and the council to talk about, you know, the legislative agenda, and then also have him kind of update us as the process plays out. But he is going to be in Olympia and probably traveling up here, not regularly, but he did go to college up here, so he does have reasons to come up here. But the fee is $20,000. It's 12 months, and we can review it at that point.
Councilmember Olson.
I'm kind of share Councilmember Bursch's concern of expenses. We've had a lot of issues with expenses lately, not being defined. So what can we do to get expenses more defined?
I believe it picks up everything. I really don't know.
What's up the contract?
Because it says we shall pay the consultant $1,606 for the services listed above, including expenses.
Oh, okay.
So it's an all-in.
All right.
And
well,
I've sent this to him, and he's looked at it, and is fine with the structure of it.
With that, I'd like to move for approval of AB 1609005, seeing as how we just gave the developers a $50,000 gift. Perhaps we could give ourselves a $20,000 one.
So we've got a motion. Is there a second for a good discussion?
Okay.
Been moved and seconded to adopt the contract. Council discussion, Councilmember Goodrich.
I'm kind of in favor of this. I think we as a city have lost out on some things to Bellingham just because The mayor of Bellingham has a lot more clout and connections and stuff than we do, and to have a little better chance or something of getting some things for us and maybe steal some stuff away from Bellingham, I'd be kind of in favor of that. I think, you know, they got a professional in Bellingham, we don't. Our staff is good here. You guys have gotten us a lot of stuff, but compared to Kelly, there's no comparison there.
Yeah, and for maybe council members that don't know, Kelly was a state representative for 15, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go to staff or council first. Councilmember Birch.
So when he travels up to talk to the staff or the council, are we going to pay for his stay in a motel?
That's not what it was intended here. This was including expenses.
Okay.
Council. Someone from the audience, come forward, please. Welcome back, Mrs. Goldsmith.
So, Yvonne Goldsmith, 5840 Church Road. I think your alien invaded my body. Okay. We actually had a lobbyist when I served. We shared the expense with, I believe, the city of Linden. I realize this was many years ago. It did benefit us immensely. And I just want to make sure that it says including. Does it include his expenses or is it plus expenses? Make sure that's really clarified.
It says including.
Please. Okay. Just so he doesn't come back and bite us in the butt and say, oh, by the way, here's my mileage, which I am a very big person against mileage, and my blah, 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 blah. $1,666 a month. Wow, that's awesome. And I know that our delegation does a really good job, and they keep their ears open, our state reps and our senator, but to have this person working for us, it's a heck of a deal.
Thank you. Customer Watson, do you have anything?
I have a quick question for Greg. Will he be working with the Association of Washington Cities, or is he going to be kind of working on his own?
A little bit of both. In fact, it's interesting you bring that up because one of the things that that Brian talked about when we were talking with him, he said that, you know, AWC is very good at advocating for those needs that are shared amongst a lot of cities. And he would help them in that endeavor. He says, but there are times when the needs and desires for Ferndale may not have that collective benefit throughout the whole AWC statewide organization. And that's where you can benefit from a targeted advocate down there that can speak to your needs and your needs specifically. But otherwise, yeah, he would be working with AWC, with the other lobbyists from Whatcom County to help bring forward those common interests of the communities in Whatcom County down to Olympia.
Thank you. Council, there's a motion to adopt the contract for the lobbyists for $20,000 a year. Any more discussion? Councilmember Goodrich.
Just a procedural one. How are we going to say we got interest A or know that we need interest A lobbied down in Olympia?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is she going to be monitoring stuff and come up to us and say, hey, interest A you guys need to look at or I don't, how's the relationship going to work?
Yeah, in the attachment A, when it talks about the scope of services, after the obvious need for him to register is a lobbyist, the second one is it says work with city staff to develop a legislative agenda that advances the city's interests but accounts for political climate. So I could envision him either coming up physically or coming up via Skype and us as a group talking about it. And he will be able to, I think, show us a roadmap. You know, these are the type of things that you might have where I might be successful, or these may be programs or grant programs or whatever it might be, opportunities out there. So I think he's going to be able to identify opportunities for us, and then we know Ferndale better than he does. And so Star Park would probably be a good example. He could have, because of the unique nature of Star Park, help us down in Olympia carry forward the Star Park, you know, message. So it's going to need to be a collaboration between Brian and the council and staff. So he wants to do the best he can. And so we can't give him a list of, 4,300 items, but we can certainly come up with, and he can help us narrow down those items where his expertise and our interests coincide.
Okay. Council, are you ready to vote on the contract? All in favor of adopting the contract for the lobbyist, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The contract has passed. We've hired a lobbyist for a year. And thank you very much. City Council, moving on. I think we're at mayor report. Is that correct? I don't have anything other than to reflect on. I think we had a good summer. Street Festival went well. Fiesta Petraeus went well the other day. The sun got finally came out. But I wanted to comment on Old Settlers Weekend. Kind of our quintessential paramount event of the year is Old Settlers Weekend, which I thought went really well. We have a need for more trustees. I'm just going to lay that for council. Maybe there are council members that are interested. We've just had a number of retirement. Folks are getting older and such. And this event's been going on since 1896 or something like that. It's got a lot of wonderful history. So we're looking for trustees, folks that have, you just have to live in the county 7 years. Or 10 years, I believe, 10 years, and you can become a trustee. So talk to me or talk to any of the Old Settlers. And that is all I have.
Well, following along on that, Heritage Society is virtually in the same boat kind of as Old Settlers.
Yeah.
A lot of our people are getting older and retiring and can't do it. Basically, if you don't know, kind of a summary, Old Settlers seems to take care of the outside of the cabins. The Heritage Society takes care of more of the artifacts and things inside the cabins. And you don't have to be a resident of 10 years to be a Heritage Society. So, both groups are very responsible down at the park there in the weekend and things. There's a lot of interaction between the two, and they're both, like you said, in that area where we need some.
And that park is a one-of-a-kind park. It really is, and that event is a neat event. So just need a few younger faces, newer faces, different faces, and there you have it. Any other council reports? Council Member Olson?
I have a question. Malloy Road, how many signs are we putting up there that justify us not having to move them on the weekend?
The signs for the school closure? I don't know off the top of my head. I'd have to review the map, but there's a significant number of signs that are going up. As you know, we're changing it into a section for one-way travel on Malloy. So
and driving down there today, I saw one about at the roundabout, which will close that off, mm-hmm. and then one at Seamount in Malloy going south. I count.
There's more of them that are, we have signs that are further north as well, directing people that there's a road closure ahead that's up at the Thornton area.
And we also have four on the south part of Malloy as you go north.
And that's an amount that we can't move on the weekend?
That would be a great question for Public Works.
Oh, well, you're jumping in.
I just saw the map. I'm sorry.
The intent with not moving the signs on the weekend was to maintain the consistency through that closure period so that we get people used to an established traffic pattern. We're not going back and forth so that we don't have people that are coming down.
There just
seems
to be a lot of complaints about that because now we've created what will soon be a traffic jam at Seamount and Vista. And there is no roundabout. And they go like hell through there. And how long is this going to go on?
The anticipated end date for the project on Washington Street is currently September 29th.
Basically 3 weeks.
About 3 weeks.
I guess we'll have to monitor it and maybe revisit this.
I think that, us continually evaluating the traffic patterns out there and making modifications that will improve everybody's experience and the safety for the people involved is something that we're very much into. So.
Thank you.
Related to that. Will there be police officers at key intersections as well?
There are going to be police, especially during the school transit times.
Okay. Council reports? Councilmember Hanson?
It was Councilmember Watson who asked for a brief update on the CCAB purchases for the pavilion, and I spoke with Ann this afternoon. We purchased a little over 250 chairs about 25 6-foot round tables, some rectangles, a few other pieces of equipment to help facilitate the rental of the pavilion. We are kind of waiting for an opening for the contractor to go ahead with audiovisual for the pavilion, and so we're moving forward on those items to get the pavilion kind of up to industry standards. And then with the chamber taking over the facilitation of the rental, that seems to be going well. Ann said that there's been some minor hiccups along the way, but that it seems to be kind of fitting in with her normal work schedule. So.
Thank you, Councilor.
I have one other thing. For those of you that know, I've been pushing this tourism
promotion area.
Riley and I tried it. We got Motel 6 to sign off. Cedars refused, citing, you take too much money from my business anyway. Cedars is foreign-owned in Canada, and also Super 8 had the same exact response, and they are also owned in Canada. So for now, it's failed.
For now. Hope springs eternal.
Thank you for your efforts.
Pessimist.
Councilmember Goodrich.
Just an issue with rentals at the park with the Fiesta Patrias. They showed up Friday using the stage and bringing in porta potties and stuff like that, which was a surprise to me as a tour guide. The application that I heard from Bo was they're supposed to start at 2 o'clock, and I heard music coming from the park at noon. So I don't know if there were some miscommunications there or they just overstepped the usage or what we need to do for future things like that. So
there were some issues with the pavilion rental and that particular function as well.
Yeah. Thank you. Moving on to staff report. Community Development Director Burnett.
This week, Star Park is closed as we do some scheduled maintenance. We're going to be fixing a ramp that's there that a number of kids' knees have become acquainted with. we're working with Freeburg Construction through the Ferndale School District. Wynwood Landscaping is also donating labor, as is Pioneer Post Brand, Kramer Construction, and, of course, the Public Works crew who really go above and beyond. As does Kyle, our building inspector. Also, next Wednesday at 7 p.m. here, I believe Council Member Taylor is going to be presenting to our Planning Commission, letting them know more about the background of our neighbors to the south, the Lummi Nation. So, of course, the public is always invited to attend, and kudos, I think, for Commissioner Goldsmith for first suggesting that in the first place. That's all I have.
Thank you. Public Works Director of Restaurants.
Keith beat me to it. I was just going to give everybody a heads up about the Washington Street project is continuing. And with the start of school, we're going to see those closures in the one-way in effect on Molloy. So, and as I mentioned earlier, we'll continue to evaluate the effectiveness of that and make modifications if necessary.
Very good. Chief isn't here, but we'll be posting soon the job on that. That'll be good. City Clerk, Susan Duncan.
I'm very happy to report on behalf of the Health and Wellness Committee that we have achieved our 50% requirement of participation in the health questionnaire. That's 50% of both employees and spouses.
Another shaming almost, activity.
Yeah. but that's without a doubt the hardest element of all the required elements for our Well City designation, which of course saves the city 2% on insurance premiums. So it's a pretty big deal.
Thank you very much. Communications Officer, Mr. Sweeney.
Nothing here.
City Minister, Mr. Young.
I'm happy to report that this past Sunday, my son and daughter-in-law welcomed a new baby girl. So.
Aww.
Since this is a permanent recording, hello, Ilya.
Yeah.
and I at least want one opportunity to say it correctly. Circa Salmonen.
Right.
I mean, in the range there, we do want to welcome you. Those are all council reports, all staff reports. Mr. Goldsmith, what made you?
Since Chief isn't here tonight, I can tell him how to make some really fast extra money. I would like to invite the Ferndale police to sit in my driveway and write tickets. I am so tired of almost getting clipped when I pull out of my driveway. And I really would like to have a sign somewhere on Church Road where that hill was supposed to come down, where it is truly limited sight when you come up. You don't know that you're coming into the two driveways right there in church, the last two, before Crestline. And they can sit in my driveway any day.
We will get to that to the chief. I would entertain a motion to dismiss this evening.
So moved.
Second.
The move is seconded to dismiss this evening. All in favor say aye.
Aye.